Good evening, everybody.
Hello. Hello.
So I recognize Cleveland in your voice.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Doing wonderful, actually. And who else do I have here?
Darlene.
Hi, Darlene. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
It's good to have you here this evening. We're supposed to have several people on the call, but it's going to be much smaller than normal tonight for week one, sounds like. So you're going to get some very personalized service here this evening.
Okay.
Okay.
Which means if you have questions, I can answer lots of questions for you. Did you guys both get the DISC Coaching Catalyst, the reading material for the class?
Yes, I have it.
Yes, I have it too.
All right, good. And you saw the syllabus for today?
Yes.
Actually, for the whole 6 weeks?
Yep.
And do you have a chance of doing the reading, or are we gonna fly blind? Because I know you guys got up a little late.
I did a little reading, not much, but I've been reading it this evening.
Okay. Well,
same here.
It'll be fairly easy to follow along. I sent you guys also, of course, the slides for tonight's presentation as well to kind of help you walk through the process.
Okay.
Okay. So
yes.
Let me just ask. You know, a couple basic questions to get started. I mean, I'll start by introducing myself. I am Jay Fire, and I am a mentor coach for CTA, but I'm an active working coach. And DISC is actually a very big part of my practice. I do not require assessments for my clients, but most of them know that I'm a DISC specialist, and they come to me because they want to take an assessment and help identifying their natural strengths, their natural challenges, and get coaching through that. So I use DISC both one-on-one, but I also use it in workshops quite a bit, where it can be a pretty good moneymaker for you. We'll discuss that a little later on in our sessions here. I've been a coach since 2002, and I got DISC certified in 2003, and I've been using it ever since.
Okay.
So anyway, I think it's a marvelous tool. We'll walk through it very slowly here together over the next 6 weeks and learn about the basics of DISC, certainly, but also a little deeper into our own behaviors and how DISC can help us identify our behaviors and our clients' behaviors, how to coach around those things. So that's my basic history and background. Any questions about that or things I can answer for you before we move forward?
No, I don't have any, Dave.
All right.
This is Darlene. I didn't get the overheads. I'm not sure where that is. And if you don't want to take the time in class to discuss that, we could do that privately.
Sure.
I did take the assessment, though.
Okay.
And I was flabbergasted at the 20-page report. Flabbergasted. I don't know who else is online here. Is it another gentleman who? I'm Darlene.
Yes, Cleveland. I'm Cleveland.
Cleveland, hi, I'm Darlene.
Good to meet you, Darlene.
Same here. And I took the course with Deborah. In reference to career transitions coaching.
Okay.
And I'm a former public school administrator and educator, university instructor, 29 years. I retired, burnt out.
Okay.
And I see, I mean, as I read this information, as I looked at the assessment results and my profile, now I can tell you who I had conflict with and probably what quadrant they felt they were in. Oh, my gosh. I'm just flabbergasted. So I'm flabbergasted with the assessment, what it has to offer, how it can help people to work together, how it can how I'm just flabbergasted, and how you can recognize the people who are going to ruffle your feathers. So I'm fairly, you know, I am a novice with this. However, my reference point of the challenges of career challenges, and if you have such an information base, how it could really make life a whole lot smoother and much more productive, both in and out of work. So I'm looking so forward to getting information from this course from you, Mr. Meyer, and also learning from Cleveland and whoever else is in the class. So with that, I'll clamp my mouth, but I just want you to know how awesomely excited I am.
Well, very good. I think you're going to find it really helpful, Darlene. And one of the big pluses of a tool like this is that it gives you a language to use with those people who annoy you, that can cause conflict with you, that you can use a very safe language that helps bridge that gap. And that's why it's so successful in businesses, because you can have that discussion without it turning into a fight.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's part of the beauty of it. So, Cleveland, tell us why you decided to take the DISC program.
Well, I was talking to some of my classmates in the past class that you were teaching, and they, especially Phil, he was trying to encourage me to take the DISC program because I could use it in my coaching with veterans. And when I took the assessment today myself, I was amazed how it nailed me down to the T. I mean, it just put me on paper, and I was just totally surprised. But I shouldn't have been surprised, because I know how I am. I know my past classmates know me by now. But it was talking about the quietness, the calmness, the analytical thinker, the precise person that want to do things right and want to have time to look through things and to do it right the first time. And that's truly how I am, and I'm just totally amazed, just like Darlene. I am amazed how it nailed me down.
Yeah, it's a very, very accurate tool for something that does not take hours and hours to complete. So, Darlene, as way of disclosure here, Cleveland was in one of my certified coach program classes that CTA teaches.
Oh.
That's where I met him before, and he referenced Phil, who was one of his classmates, who had used DISC years ago and came back to me for a refresher on it. And he's using it now in his business. And it can be a great tool for building a coaching business. So that's where that little bit of history there comes from. Okay?
Okay.
All right. All right, so again, Darlene, tomorrow, you know, check your spam filter, because the syllabus that tells you what we're going to cover session by session went out this morning, this afternoon, and attached to that was actually the session one slides. But I think you'll be able to follow along. And by the way, these calls are recorded. And do you guys have Dropbox accounts?
No.
I think I do. Yes.
Okay. So, Darlene, Dropbox is a service you can get for free that allows me to share bigger files with you. So things like audio files, I can post them to Dropbox. You'll be able to log on and then download the file. And so I'll put things out there like that, those kind of audios. Other things as well that are too big to send through email, I'll post out there for you.
Okay.
So I would recommend you getting a Dropbox account. They are free. And it's very, very handy.
Okay.
All right. And that's where I'll post the recordings after the class is over. And I'll have to send you an invitation to go to my Dropbox account and download these files. So I'll do that as soon as I know that Darlene, you're set up. Okay?
All right. Uh-huh. All right.
So there are six sessions in this class, and when the class comes to an end, there's a DISC certification exam. It is not particularly difficult. Everything in there is something we're going to cover in class, or it's in your reading, or it's in your profile itself. So not too difficult to get through that, but that's what's going to get you DISC certified at the end here. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
So let's move into some real meat here, some background information about the DISC assessment and where DISC came from. So DISC takes its roots from a book written way back in 1928. And the book was called The Emotions of Normal People. And the key word here is normal, okay? Because DISC is not effective on people who are who have mental disorders or some way unstable that way. The book was written by a guy named Dr. William Moulton Marston. And he was a behavioral specialist, and DISC is a behavioral, not psychological, assessment. So when he wrote this book back in 1928, He did not write the assessment. He wrote the theories about behavior that were later applied to the assessment. But if you think about, as we go through the DISC process here and understand it, the concepts from DISC actually go back in time well before 1928. They go back to some guy named Hippocrates. Have you heard of him before?
Socrates?
Hippocrates.
Hippocrates.
Yes.
Oh.
It might ring a bell. Think about the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take. So it goes back to back into ancient Greece. And Hippocrates defined people as four basic types: choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, and melancholy. And you don't have to memorize those things. They're just it's just background here that this concept is not really new. It's been around for thousands of years. And Dr. Marston put it into his book in 1928 with his views of people. But he based his work and his model on how people viewed their environment and the environment that they lived in. And he fundamentally believed that some people said, look, I can control what goes on around me. I have the power to control my life. Other people believed that they don't have any power over what happens, that they're kind of along for the ride, if you will, and whatever it is going to happen anyway. So they can't control their environment. He also said that some people believe that they primarily live in a positive environment where things are pretty good and there's not a lot of trouble and you deal with things as they come up. Others view it as a negative environment where there's always trouble. We have to be on the lookout for things and things are just always going to be challenging around you. So we'll talk about more about that little bit of a model in a few minutes here. But Dr. Marston was famous, and I'll put those words in air quotes because a lot of folks have never heard of Marston, but you may have heard of a couple of his inventions or a couple of things he was involved in. For example, Dr. Marston's theories are what was used to create the lie detector.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So if you've ever been picked up late at night and taken in to give the lie detector test, yeah, Dr. Marston was involved, and it was his theories that were used to then create the lie detector. Now, also, Dr. Marston and his wife were involved in something else very important. This is, again, think back to 1928, which I know you guys weren't alive for 1928, but that time period in American history and world history, women were not a were not considered valuable necessarily in the workplace. And they weren't considered that valuable. They were considered inferior to men. Well, Dr. Marston didn't believe that, neither did his wife. So they created a cartoon character to symbolize the power of women. So, yes, they invented Wonder Woman. So, because his belief was women are powerful, they have a lot to offer, but they're not being given credit in society. So he did that to try and bring out the power of women and help people see how much they had to offer. All right. So if we go back to Dr. Marston's theories and the concept that people think that they are more powerful than the environment. Darlene, since you haven't got the slides in front of you, you might want to draw a four-quadrant model, simply a line down the center of the page, up to down, and then one left to right to create four quadrants.
Yeah.
On the top of that page, he said those people that's up there, people view themselves as more powerful than the environment. People
in the upper, in the upper which quadrant?
The very top of the page.
Oh.
So the line would go right down to the middle of, if you will, more powerful.
Oh.
Okay. People on the lower part of that page, the bottom of that vertical line, would see themselves as less powerful. The environment controls them. On the left-hand side, he said people view the environment primarily as unfavorable. Life is difficult. The environment is challenging. Things are not going to be easy. And the right-hand side turns into the people who perceive it as a primarily favorable environment. And these are the theories he put forth in his book. And that kind of creates this little bit of a model here. So if you look at that, those four quadrants, what you end up with is people in the upper left-hand corner of that quadrant where they are more powerful than the environment but view it as unfavorable. Those folks look at life and say, you know what? Things aren't so great. It's an unfavorable environment, but I can control things. So I can fix things. I can fix it. I can make it better.
Oh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
The upper left-hand quadrant. The upper right-hand quadrant, again, more powerful than the environment and primarily a favorable environment, those folks are happy. Those folks look at life and go, life is great. We're having fun. Okay? Because it's a good place and they can control things. How great is that? So, if you look down to the lower right-hand quadrant, where you're now less powerful than the environment, but primarily a good thing, primarily a favorable environment, those folks are feeling, you know, they're a little queasy because they haven't got control, but things are pretty good. So they're going like, everything's okay. Hope nothing goes wrong. I think we're okay. And that's how they view the world. The lower left-hand quadrant, where again they're less powerful and an unfavorable environment, those folks are saying, you know what, this looks like trouble. Everything looks like trouble. How do I protect myself from the bad things happening around me? So, Darlene, could you follow that without the slides in front of you? Hopefully you got that model.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to make sure I got the quadrants correct, that's all. The lower left-hand corner is people who are less powerful.
Correct.
However, the environment is favorable.
That's the lower right-hand quadrant.
Oh. So then the favorable environment is on the right side of the quadrant?
That is correct, yes.
Oh, I hit it backwards. All righty.
Okay.
All right.
Unfavorable is on the left, and favorable is on the right.
I can see how I see how this works now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you hear people talk in the faculty lounge about this very theory. They're not saying it's a theory, but you can hear them talking about such circumstance.
There you go. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Or the cafeteria. In business world, the cafeteria, you can hear them. You can hear them during breakfast, lunch, or if you bring bagels in, you can hear staff talking together, and you can hear this very conversation.
Exactly, and they're putting themselves in those quadrants without even realizing that they exist.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm a novice to this. This is like flabbergasting me. I am flabbergasted.
Well, good. I'm glad you like it. It's very
I wish I had known this stuff when I was a public school principal. I wish I had known this.
Well, you know, I first learned about it when I was working in telecommunications as an executive. And I knew about it, I read about it, but I didn't know enough. If I had known then what I know now,
oh,
it would have been scary, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
So this ties back very directly to the disk model. And I show you this version because there are times when I'm talking to somebody, I'm thinking, where do they belong? And sometimes I revert back to Marston's original theories about the environment to see where I think they belong. That's why I show this to you now.
It's
not part of the assessment itself, but it's very powerful to help you understand where folks belong.
Yeah.
Okay?
Questions
so far? All right. So let's move a little bit on here and talk about the actual assessments. So how many of you guys remember the year 1972 with any kind of clarity?
I think I remember it. I was young,
I was
a teenager, but I remember it. Yeah.
So in 1972, you know, we didn't have personal computers. We had things called typewriters.
Yep.
Yeah.
And when you typed, if you made a mistake, you had to use some kind of correction fluid on it or retype it again because everything was really very manual. The disk assessment was created in that time period in 1972. And at that point in time, literally, when you took the assessment, you filled in little boxes on a form and mailed it into somebody, and they would spend the time to go through and grade it by hand and then type out a report for you. So you can imagine it was sometimes months by the time you took the assessment and got the results back. So that was rather cumbersome. So the assessment was actually created in 1972 at the University of Minnesota. There were two PhDs there. Got together using Marston's work and their behavioral work to create the actual assessment. And it's a little bit different than Marston's model in that the top of that model where he said they were more powerful than the environment, these people use the term they were more active, more engaged, more involved. Okay. And where Marston had that idea of being less powerful than the environment, they use the term thoughtful or reserved, something like that.
Okay.
The left-hand side, where Marston said things were unfavorable, they said those people were more focused on tasks and getting things done. The people on the right-hand side, where we had the term favorable being used, they used the term people-oriented. Engaged with people, liked people, wanted to be around people, they were more people-oriented. And that's how they defined their four-quadrant model. you can see how it relates back to Marston's model, but it's not, certainly not exactly the same.
No.
Yeah. So it's different. Now, when the graphs, when they first came out with DISC and everything was copyrighted, they actually created three different graphs that they used to try and present how people interacted with each other and how they fit into this DISC assessment. And the three graphs were popular for a number of years, and quite frankly, most companies who now produce DISC, and I'll come back to that in just a second here, still use some version of the three graphs. And they were line graphs, where you fell on the D scale, where you fell on the I scale, where you fell on the S scale, and where you fell on the C scale. So being created in 1972, DISC is no longer proprietary. It's now out in the public domain. And there are a number of companies that produce DISC instruments. They are normally very similar the way they do the assessment itself, but most of the results are still done with some version of the graphs. Now, as we go through the history here, just a little bit about this is important, is the fact that the company that we use now, that you guys use for everything DISC Workplace, is something you took.
Yeah.
We can trace our roots directly back to those two PhDs.
Two PhDs?
Yeah, at the University of Minnesota, two PhDs created the first assessment.
Okay. I'm just finding the slides in my spam.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so it's the University of Minnesota that people are naturally
active or reserved.
And that people focus on
tasks or people.
Are you in that screen?
Yep.
Defined?
The four quadrant model.
Oh. Which was actually created from the three graphs.
Well, the four quadrant model was then used to create the three graphs. They told you where you fell in each of those four quadrants. So as we have evolved here, Wiley, which is a company that we're using here today and that you're receiving the assessment from, is an original DISC creator. But they've evolved from the three graphs, and now they use what's called a circumplex model, with a single point, single dot, and then shading. We'll discuss that more in a few minutes here.
Okay.
But the key message for now is that you're going to find a lot of DISC knockoffs out there that were created using the research that was already done by University of Minnesota and by the people at what is now Wiley Publishing. And the difference between them and Wiley is that Wiley has PhDs still on staff. We're going through regularly and reviewing the assessment, reviewing the way it's presented, looking for changes in the culture and how it impacts people, maybe changing the words that are used a little bit. And so it's a very active organization working still to keep DISC current today. So you'll see things like extended DISC, world DISC. You'll see things with colors on them or flowers or animals. You'll say, that looks a lot like DISC. Yeah. Based off the very same theories, just not brought up to date like the Wiley material is. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So if you look at the next page in your slides, this says, which is there are two key components to this revised disk assessment. They revised it about 4 years ago to create this new scaling. And the first thing is there's a Likert scale involved. And that's a scale that kind of that runs, if you will, like from 0 to 5 or from 1 to 5, where you go from I strongly disagree with something to I strongly agree.
Yeah.
And that's, as you saw that as you took the assessment, that's that Likert scale.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a different measurement.
Okay.
And they use that scale because it makes it easy to score the assessments and create easy averaging to get some numerical values.
So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So when we took that this morning or whenever, Cleveland and I took that today, correct, Cleveland?
Yes.
Okay. Then whether we chose agree, disagree, each of those had a quantitative value to it that we didn't see?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. And it automatically calculates the quantitative value without seeing it and places it on, I don't know, I think I saw it in the guide. In the handbook.
Yep.
Okay.
Just put them all together to figure out where you belong.
Okay.
And so those things range from, on our sheet here, from strongly disagree to strongly agree.
Mm-hmm.
But as you might be aware from your own experiences, some folks very seldom choose either extreme. And so these things are actually adjusted for people who don't either choose the high or the low end. So the system adjusts for it automatically.
Oh.
We can't see it. We can't do it by hand, but the system behind the scenes does all that. That's what those smart PhDs do that I can only discuss and can't really show you how it works. But the other key component here, besides that Likert scale, is something called adaptive testing. So what that means to you is that when the profile, you take the assessment, it says, huh, there's some things here that are kind of unclear. And so without your even knowing it, the system may ask you more questions than it might ask somebody else, because something you did there made it unclear. So it says, not really quite clear. Let's ask some more questions here. And you'll never be aware that you're being asked more questions than somebody else is because you don't see them doing the profile, but it adapts itself based on the results. So very, very powerful the way that is done. You look at the next slide, it kind of discusses that a little bit, that adaptive testing ensures the clarity from the results. So if results are murky at all, I say digs further into, quote, murky outcomes. I'm not really sure where Cleveland belongs. Is he really a C or is he really more of an S? He just asks more questions until it's sure. So it self-modifies itself based on the responses of the person taking the assessment.
So, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
So when a person is taking the test, are the questions different and vary dependent on the answers?
The first 78 questions are all the same.
The first 7 or 8 questions are all the same?
78. 78. Not 7 or 78.
The first 78 questions? I didn't answer that many questions.
Well, you did. Didn't seem like that many, though, did it? Because it goes pretty quick. So when you do the standard 78 questions, then it says, are the responses consistent across the styles? And if it's not, it asks you more questions. And then it figures out which of the styles you fit into based on that. So you might be asked as many as, I think the number is 96 questions if it goes all the way to the very end. But for most people, it stops at 78.
Oh.
But again, if it's not clear, it keeps on going.
Oh.
Very, very cleverly designed.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So I want to talk here about something very important about what DISC does not measure. Because DISC is really a valuable tool, but it's only valuable in certain areas because certain things it doesn't cover. So if you look at your assessment and your profile, and you're looking for your reading for that matter, you know some things it might not measure? Let me ask the question more directly. So Cleveland, how'd you do in the math section?
Didn't measure the math section.
How about earth science? You do the earth science section?
No.
That wasn't there either, yeah. So it doesn't measure your intelligence. It measures behaviors. It doesn't measure intelligence.
Yes.
It doesn't measure your internal desire. It doesn't measure your value system. The strength of your character. Do you have high morals or low morals? It does not measure your emotional intelligence. Your political beliefs, your sense of humor. So this is important to understand because as you provide the assessment to certain people, especially when you get into groups, sometimes people will cross their arms and go, can't ask me a bunch of questions and put me into a box. That just doesn't work that way. That's just not life. You're right. It isn't. And we're not trying to do that. So we're actually measuring just certain things here, not everything. And Dr. Marston would tell us, were he alive today, he'd say, you know what, people are all different. But in these certain key ways, they're predictably different. So when we tell you that you're a D or an I or an S, or a C, that's measuring a component of your behavior. It's not a measurement of you as a person. It's not a measurement of your worth to the world. It's not a measure of your morals and values. So it only measures certain things. But as you guys saw, it measures those things very well. So that's an important concept. I want you guys to keep that in mind always. This does measure certain things. A lot of things it does not measure. Now, people should not get hung up on the idea of I'm being put into a box, because you're not. Just certain things are consistent across behavior. Questions, comments?
No.
Okay. Let's look at today's DISC model. And as you see on your slides, it's kind of filled in for you there. It says active versus thoughtful. That also might say reserved on the bottom there. Left-hand side says questioning. It also could be a task orientation. And accepting could also be viewed as a people orientation. Those words are kind of interchangeable as you look at the model. So if we go back to the concept of what each one of those quadrants means, like we did with the Marston original model, that upper left-hand quadrant. People are active, but questioning. That's referred to as the high D quadrant. And that D might stand driver or dominant.
Oh, my gosh.
Direct, decisive. Those are all good D words to use. And those people are primarily results-oriented. They want to get things done. Let's get them done now.
Oh, my gosh.
darling.
Oh, my gosh.
You have our right-hand quadrant where we have they're both active and now they're accepting or people-oriented. That's the high I quadrant. And that I could stand for things like influencing, interactive, interested in people. Those folks are primarily very outgoing and a lot of fun to be around. They've always got a big, bright smile on their faces. They always see the positive in things. They're just kind of fun to be around. You know, for periods of time, then you want to slap them silly. But for most of the time, you know, they're fun people to be around. Okay? The lower right-hand quadrant, where you're talking about people who are accepting or people-oriented and thoughtful or reserved, that's the S quadrant. And S might stand for steady or stable or secure. These people are just nice people to be around. They're kind of the salt of the earth kind of people. Nice and friendly, want to get along, don't push too hard, don't drive too much, don't, you know, but they're nice people to be around. The lower left-hand quadrant, where they're getting more questioning or task-oriented, or more thoughtful and reserved, that's the C quadrant. And that stands for conscientious. Now, by the way, if you're doing this in a public forum and you start trying to write conscientious and you spell it wrong, people will tell you you spelled it wrong. They cannot hold themselves back from telling you you spelled conscientious wrong.
That is true.
Oh.
I know.
It also can stand for compliant, which is certainly easier to spell, or controlled.
Yeah.
So these folks follow the rule. To go back to Marston's original model, talked about, you know, less powerful the environment, that's a bad place, need to protect myself. These folks use rules to protect themselves.
Yep.
And if rules don't exist, they'll create new ones to protect themselves. Because rules are their friends.
For sure.
Yeah. Now, I'll just pause for a moment and say, you know, as we go into future weeks here, we're going to cover these behavioral styles in much more depth in each week. This is just a high-level touch on what those four quadrants look like and what they mean. Okay? But that's the key. That's how you fill the DISC model in. With driver at upper left, influencers on the upper right, steadiness in the lower right, and conscientious on that lower left.
Yeah.
All right. Now, the reality is that none of us are by ourselves I should say it that way. Most of us are not heavily driven by a single one of the four quadrants. Most of us have a primary and also a secondary. So if you look at the next page on your style chart there, it talks about the four primary DISC styles. And you'll see some words around the outside. Action, enthusiasm, collaboration. You see those words around there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Those are kind of priorities based on those, on that style. So you're kind of attached to three of them. So, for example, look at the S. You see the word stability? That's part of the S. So is support. And so is collaboration. Those three words all tie into the S natural behavior. But stability also plays into the C. So the C is stability, accuracy, and challenge. The C is like the challenge. They like to solve the challenge, actually. They like to find the solutions, those kind of things. And that word challenge is also shared by the D. The D's like challenges. The D's focus on heavily on results and are very action-oriented. And action from the D and collaboration from the S are also shared by the I, will also include enthusiasm. So those things are shared behaviors between multiple types.
Can I ask a question? And if it's a sway, then hold it for later. All of the letters of DISC are capitalized except for the I. What's the reason for that?
That's a good question, actually. I cannot swear this is true. This is what I've been told. I can't swear to it. Back in 1972, when these two PhDs created this DISC model, they went down to the, I guess it's the patent office, the patent their theories. And remember I said they were using typewriters?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, in one of the key spots they had forgot to capitalize the I.
Oh.
These two PhDs were high D individuals who just wanted to get it done. And they said, okay, fine. I'll come back and do this again. Just take it the way it is. We'll trademark it. And so here's the truth, though. This part I can tell you is true. That lowercase I is trademarked by Wiley Publishing. So when someone shows you their DISC report and they say, well, who created this one? If it's a lowercase I, you know, it came out of Wiley. If it's not, it came out of somebody else who's using generic material.
Okay.
Now you can tell, if you will, the original stuff from the not-so-original stuff. All right.
Thank you.
Next slide there, where it shows the 12 Everything DISC. And by the way, we use the word ED for Everything DISC because it takes a long time to write Everything DISC all the time. Call it ED. The 12 ED styles. So this shows you that there is not just D, I, S, and C, but there is, I with a D. There's an I by itself. There's an I with an S. There's an S with an I. S by itself. You guys see where I'm going, right? I'll read them all to you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Each one is components of the others around. And that's part of that whole concept of you're likely more than one style. You are likely two styles that are side by side. Now, that's not always true. We'll cover more of that a little later on. But normally, if you are a D, you might be a D with some I or a D with some C. If you're an S, you might be an S with some C or S with some I. And that's how the 12 basic styles for Everything DISC are created. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, that next slide, which shows DISC results. Now, I, by the way, I pulled your guys' reports, okay? So, Cleveland, I was truly stunned to see you in the C quadrant. No, I wasn't.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. No.
I knew where you were.
That's me, exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Yep. But if you look at your at the shading around yours, Cleveland, you
yes.
see you got some shading into the S and the
yes.
D and a little bit into
in
the I.
I. Yellow in the I.
Yeah. Now, Darlene has a lot of D and a lot of I.
Oh, wow.
Only a little bit of S and a little bit of C. Okay? But notice the solid shading there. Now, if you look at the page I sent you, you'll see that's got solid shading, but also has some bar shading on there.
Yes.
So in this case, this person is a high I, but they show a lot of C tendencies.
Okay.
And so that extra shade is sit there and say, yeah, they're an I, but look at all the C that's here. And it's big enough that it's really important. So when you see that extra barred shading, it means, yeah, we're out of the norm significantly here, and you need to be aware of it. Doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's out of the norm. So likewise, the next one where it says disc results number two, this person's a C, but look at all the I, that extra shading.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Also some D there. So this is an interesting style because this one, again, it's mostly a C. But with all the active results, or I should say action orientation, enthusiasm results, they're often mistaken for a D. And it's something that you wouldn't necessarily catch the differences unless you actually had them profiled to see where they really fell out. Because you might see that action orientation results driven and say, ah, well, they're a high D. But maybe some I in there. And they're really a C. So that's why the actual assessment's important versus trying to do it just by hand or just by asking them questions.
Yeah.
Gives you that kind of detail. In the third example there, you can see there's somebody right in the line between S and I, but they got a lot of C in there too.
Yeah.
So this is again, outside the norm. You don't see a lot of this kind of shading. Most folks are going to have just like you guys have. That's very typical. But when you see this extra shading, that's what it's trying to tell you. There's something else here you need to be aware of.
Excuse me?
Uh-huh.
When like in number three and the others, there's a shading that is solid, and then there's a shading that looks like ripples.
Right.
What's the difference?
So that non-solid shading, that's outside the norm.
Okay.
The regular shading is what you would normally expect to see for this person who's an S slash an I. But they also showed some unusual tendencies heavily toward the C, but also a little more toward the D and the I as well. That's what that shading's telling you. A little different there than you would normally get.
Okay, that a person who's an S, I, to have a component of also C and D is different.
It's different. It's not inside the norms. If you
okay, that's it. That's what you said.
Yeah, doesn't mean that they're bad.
Right.
Evil, just means they have, and it's likely to be somebody, for example, this might be a person who was raised, they have a natural tendency toward S and I, but they were raised by a father and mother who one was an engineer, and one was an accountant. At a young age, they were stressed
yeah.
the importance of accuracy, and they kind of learned that behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's pretty common that way. Or it could be not their parents, but even maybe their first job they got that was, you know, very important, so they really wanted to stick it out. And there was a lot of detailed work there that they didn't really like, but the job was important, so they really focused and learned it, and it impacted them in the long term. So that's what that means. All right.
Okay. An employer might like this profile for certain job roles and responsibilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And picture yourself, here's an easy example. Picture yourself trying to hire someone to work at the front desk in your office building. You want them to be happy and bubbly and make people feel welcome. So you're thinking, I want some I and some S. But you know, when people come in, I need to know who they are. I need to make sure they follow their appointment schedule correctly. So I need some C. That person might fit perfectly in there. Or you might say, well, people come in sometimes to try and bulldoze their way through my front office. So I need more D.
More, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. The next slide I'm going to spend just a minute or so on, not really very long at all. This is kind of what the model looks like, okay? The D, I, S, and C, and the different words that focus around it. This is someone you could spend some time on learning to draw this by hand. What I've discovered over the years is that when I hand somebody, I'm talking to them about maybe doing a DISC workshop for them, and I show them this nice, pretty picture, this model thing, color and all that kind of stuff, they kind of go, yeah, cool. If I'm drawing it as I'm talking to them about it, with the axis, the up and down axis, and the vertical and horizontal axes, and I talk as I'm drawing it,
oh,
they're intrigued.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So if you can practice learning how this works and begin to draw this on your own, I have drawn this on the back of napkins more times than I care to remember, but it leads to workshops where I'm used to DISC profiles. So it's worth doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Now, let's go on to the next page, the page with the Johari window. You guys heard of the Johari window before?
No.
No.
So, got a fascinating history behind it. It was invented back in 1954 by two guys whose names were Joe and Perry. Okay, so it's not so fascinating after all, but that's the story, though. It's two guys named, their name were Joe Tufts and Harry Ingram, created the Johari window. And I use this here. This is a great analogy for coaching in general, but especially for DISC. Okay? So in a coaching engagement, there are certain things that the client knows about themselves, and that I can see also as I'm talking to them. So, for example, talking to Cleveland through our 6 months together in the certified coach program, I recognize some things about Cleveland, including that, his tendency to be a high C, quiet, focused on detail and results, that kind of stuff. So those things fit in the upper left-hand quadrant. Okay, there are things that both you know and I know. Using Cleveland as an example here.
Yeah.
But if you look at that, at the lower left-hand quadrant where it says mask, there are certain things that I don't know about Cleveland. Okay?
Yeah.
Some things he's hidden from my view, either intentionally or we just haven't gotten to discuss those things yet. So I don't know about his political views. I'm not sure how he views family orientation. We haven't discussed those things. Those things are hidden. They're part of what's called the mask. Likewise, the upper right-hand quadrant, there are some blind spots, some things that I, as his mentor coach, saw about Cleveland that he really didn't know about himself. But as an outside observer, I could observe those things. And last but not least, there's this potential, the lower right-hand quadrant, the unknown. You don't know it, and I don't know it. For example, on the way home tonight, Cleveland might have stopped and bought a lottery ticket because he was just feeling lucky. And tomorrow, they draw the numbers, he wins $10 million. Well, I didn't know that was coming. Neither did he. That's
no.
Okay. So those are things that neither of us really know. Now, the goal in coaching is for me to encourage Cleveland as my client to tell me more about what's going on in his life and around his challenges, move things from that mask, and broaden the arena. Likewise, as his coach, I'm going to bring things to his attention that he may not be aware of. Move things from the blind spots area, bring them into his area of view, and again, engage the arena. Now, DISC does the same thing. By helping put all these things about you into words that allow you to see yourself as others see you, we're going to reduce the blind spots and uncover some things that are in the hidden area as well, the mask area, and broaden the arena. So, Darlene, if you're at work and someone else shows you their DISC profile, you read through it, you're going to learn some things about them that you might not have realized. And that's part of the beauty of the DISC model. It ties very closely back into this because it helps open up the arena, makes it larger, therefore makes it easier to communicate and easier to work with people. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right.
Definitely.
With the top of the hour, any questions I can answer for you about will be covered here today?
No, I don't have any, Dave. I'm still in awe about my assessment. I'm going to finish reading and finish learning more about myself. That I know, but I didn't think anything could tell me about that. But I'm not hidden anymore. So I think I'm out in the open now. So
you know, if you show it to your wife, she might go, yeah, I already knew these things. Some things that
maybe
were in a blind spot that she said, yeah, I didn't discuss it because I think it was that important. But, yeah, this is true.
Yeah,
really,
I showed it to her, and that's what she said.
See, there we go.
Yeah.
Dave, you want me to call you? Can we call you Dave?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Dave, in a nutshell, what's the final exam like?
It's multiple choice questions, and it's things, you know, it'll ask you about, like, tendencies of different styles, you know, which tendency of a D style. You pick the ones that are appropriate. We'll get into some details about combinations of styles and how that's important. That's in there as well. But everything is either directly in the reading or directly in the assessment itself. Because you saw the assessment that you took and got results from today is also a teaching tool. So you'll see some things in there. We'll cover all that stuff, how it all works as we go through our class together. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
It's not that hard, really. So you shouldn't worry about the exam.
I'm a D, results.
Give it to me now.
Yeah, that's a portion of the results, but I really want to use this to start a business and or to do workshops because I'm retired now. I've been retired for 10 years, and I've been taking some coaching classes, and I really, really like it, and it's what I see as a future.
Well, I quit my corporate job in 2002, so I was 48, and made coaching my business, and that's been my business the last 15 years or so, and it creates a great lifestyle that I really love. So I think you're on the right track there, darling.
All right, and nice meeting you, Cleveland.
Nice meeting you, Darlene. You have a good evening.
You
we're
too.
The D and the I in next week's session together. So you're going to read about the D's and the I's. We'll come and discuss them and talk about how they work and how they need to be coached. Okay?
Okay.
Okay,
Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
All right.
Have a great week.
Okay.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.